score.
There's one rule.
Welcome back to whoa, not loud.
When you can hear it on this side of the mic, you know it's this side of the speaker, you know it's loud.
I just forgot that I turned up the master volume so people in the back can hear us. But welcome back.
The lights are on. Bring the party outside.
Lights are on. We're podcasting here. We're live. The live Q&A section of the show.
This is my favorite because I never know what's coming.
It's almost like blind lessons. It's like if somebody filled your lesson sheet, but like you didn't know who was coming.
Yeah, I knew nothing about him.
You couldn't prepare at all.
Nope. Or like walk the driving range out of nowhere.
Which we're going to do.
It's going to be awesome. We're going to do it 4th of July week.
We're going to try and get some, it's like I can't say my S's today. We're going to try and get Scott some YouTube presence this year. We're going to get the lav mics going. Yep. We're going to get him out on the driving range, see if he can fix some people randomly. We're going to do some YouTube content. We're going to see what we can do, and let's see if we can grow your presence on the socials, you know?
Yeah.
Just for the record right here, how many followers do you have on Instagram right now? 900, right? 900 and change?
I'm trying to get to 1,000.
Right.
So,
but let's put it on the record now so that later or in years to come when you've got tens of thousands, we'll come back to this episode and say, remember when you had 900?
Well, it's funny. Erica's done a lot of really good work for me on social too, which has been a big help. And we're kicking that back up here soon. But we've had a lot of success in that department. It's like getting over 800, like all of a sudden, like we got to 900. It was like 3 or 4 weeks later, we're like at 900. It took forever to get to 8. And it was like, boom, you're at 9.
That's always how it is. I mean,
slow, and then it starts taking off.
One of my, I don't know if I would call her a friend. She's like, she's one of my friend's sisters. But she just started,
sister's friends? Or one of your friend's sisters?
One of my friend's sisters.
Okay, I didn't know. I was like, wait, okay,
but
never
she
mind.
She just got, just like this past week, got 2 million followers on TikTok. 2 million.
What?
And like
welcome to the world of
we're talking about exponential growth, right? Like it took her, you know, year and a half to get to 1 million. She's really funny. I mean, there's no wonder she's got millions of followers, but it took her, you know, like a year and a half, almost 2 years to get to 1 million followers, and then in the next like 8 months she got another 1 million. So it's like this exponential growth curve, like even when you're just in like
crazy.
The 800s going to 900, like it's just exponential growth is a real thing.
That's insane. That's the way it happens. Like people think it goes, you go overnight success, and there are some of that with
there
social, but
yeah.
For the most part it's slow methodical build up to get there. So should we go ahead and stop boring the listeners with random talk?
With social media talk, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a question, or I didn't have a question. This is a surrogate question, if you will, from a session that we had on the range yesterday or earlier this week,
yeah.
Right? And the question was, what is it like to coach somebody who is a very high-level player, and you can almost just do like, hey, set your feet here, swing like this, and you can pretty much tell where the ball flight's going to go, right? Like, what is the difference in teaching somebody like that, a very high-level player who can pretty much do everything that you everything that you tell them to do, and then somebody who you really have to work on, be like, you know, this is the hosel, this is the toe, this is the heel. Like, describe, like, the challenges of both, because, you know, somebody asked, you know, which one do you like more? And I feel like, you know, they're different beasts to tackle, but like explain how you teach different levels of players.
So that's kind of a multi-part question, without it being a multi-part question. In terms of which ones I like more, I really like answering that question. And a lot of teachers do have preferences as to, like, I like teaching high-level players. I like teaching juniors. I like teaching young juniors. Like, people do have preferences. A lot of times it tends to follow their skill set, too. But I love variety. Like, I love novelty. I love keeping things interesting. So I don't have a preference in terms of which type of player, good or bad or new or old or experienced or inexperienced. So I really don't. It's to me more about the willingness of somebody to get uncomfortable and change. Like, there's nothing more frustrating than anybody teaching anything than to have somebody who's just fighting you all the way. And there's two different types of fight. There's fighting because they want to be right. And then there's fighting because they have just this internal struggle that they're going through. I'll teach that all day long, but if they're just kind of fighting me on the front end, like, don't waste my time. And don't waste any teacher's time. Not just mine, not just in golf. Just if you're not really willing to let your guard down and get uncomfortable, then don't waste your time.
Yeah, I feel like there's people
your money.
In anything. I mean, like, growing up, it felt like it's always school, right? Like, you teach, you know, people were willing or not willing to learn in a school situation, right? But it's like, if you're coming electively to come take a golf lesson or to take a lesson in anything, it's like, if you're gonna pay money and spend your time to try and get better, don't get better on your terms. Like,
yeah,
you have to be willing to have an open mind and be willing to sacrifice, like, your control in that situation over just, you know, being like, well, this is how I do it. When a teacher tells you to do something, it tells you to do it a different way, if that makes any sense.
In terms of the challenges and benefits of teaching, the different styles of player, high-level players generally come with a fairly large ego that, hear this out, many of them, it's very fragile. Not all of them, but many of them have a big ego in a way they want to do things. And you have to be willing as a teacher and coach to kind of fold into that to a certain degree, unless it's prohibitive to their success. In which case, you just got to be a bull and just barrel through and be willing to fight to get to where you know you have to get them to. And it's probably the weakest part of my skill set, is just in a moment where I need to just bulldoze over them and make them mad and make them upset. That's the weakest part of my skill set, is just go ahead and push on them really hard. I'm learning how to do that by having some good people in my life who do that very well. And so it'll be an area that I really have to work on to get there. But the other thing is, when you're teaching high-level players, you have to be very, very – people think it's easy to teach high-level players, and it is and it isn't. Really, they can do anything you ask them to do, for the most part. And so to that end, it's really not hard to get a lot of change out of them. However, because of how good they are, if you pick the wrong thing, there are far more ways to ruin them than there are to make them better. A lot of times there's one, maybe two ways to make a very high-level player consistently better than there are. There's probably hundreds of ways to make them worse, in very subtle little ways and very major ways. And some of the subtle ones are the trickiest ones to catch out of yourself as a teacher and coach, because it can appear like you're making them better for a short period of time, and then all of a sudden just the wheels fall off, which means it was the wrong thing to start with.
Yeah, it means that you also have to be very picky about where you start, right?
Correct.
And where you take them. And we talked about this in the last episode with Piper, is like, you know, you had to take her down a road where she really didn't understand where you were taking her.
And I could ruin my reputation as a coach.
That's true. But you took her down a situation that she didn't really know where you were taking her. And there was probably only a couple of things that would have made her, you know, better. And she did end up better. But there's also probably a million different ways that she could have gotten worse if you weren't careful with how you taught her.
Well, and that's why I said I took the road that I did. Is I could have made her better a lot faster than I did in terms of, like, getting her to shoot better scores. But I knew she wanted to play college golf and at a high level. And if I make that road slow right now and let her play better right out of the gate and let her kind of sneak into the upper 70s but not really get much lower, I ruin her long term. And it was like, let's make a really aggressive push, and that way we, her senior year, we don't have to be nearly as aggressive. And
that'll benefit her in her senior year too, because, you know, it's better that she got worse this year, or not saying she got worse, she definitely got better this year, but
the swing worse looking.
It's
it
better,
terrible.
It's better to get risky in this year of her playing career rather than next year when it's kind of like, we got to do this. You know, we got to do this, or else you're not going to go play golf at the next
level.
Well,
this is we haven't brought Gary Vee in very much in this season.
No, we haven't.
Gary Vee's like that. Like when you're young, that's the time to be aggressive.
Right. Yeah.
Be aggressive and bold in your strategies and try things and like try big things and fail big time. Like that's the time to do that. It's hard to take risk late. So when guys wait till they've had 5-10 years of success on the tour and then try and change, man, that's just a hard road. And it's almost impossible to come back from. David Duval is a classic example of that. Had a lot of success early and then tried to make some significant changes in his swing and just like disappeared.
What would you say about somebody like Lee Westwood, who has obviously been good for a very long time, but
right.
Talk to me a little bit about what you've seen in him recently with him finishing in a bunch of top fives recently. And why do you think that, for those of you who like just started following golf or have only been following golf for a few years, like explain how Lee Westwood has gotten to where he is right now as old as he is?
Well, I think it's really twofold. One, he's gotten a lot stronger, and you're seeing some of these older guys like I can't think of the other name. A gentleman who played really well recently. Not Stricker.
Stuart Sink. Yeah.
Both of those guys are a lot stronger and bigger than they used to be.
Right.
So there's that. Okay. So they have more stamina. They have more – their bodies, even though it's getting older, they've kind of in some ways made it younger. And so there's that element. But I think the other thing – and I'm going to tie it to Rory and his recent win.
You know, like – I'm going to pause you there too. Like, because Rory has been on the scene for a while. But in some ways, I feel like whatever point you're about to make, you could also argue that with Rory too, just because he is a, you know, a quote unquote old soul on the tour.
Right. Well, trying to remember which year he won the tour championship. You may be able to look it up while I'm finishing this up. But when he won the tour championship that year, it was the same year he won the Players.
FedEx Cup or tour championship?
The tour championship. I think he won them both. That's what happens most of the time. They win the tour championship plus the FedEx Cup. But he won the Players Championship that year. So you could look at when he won the Players Championship. But there's an interview, there's some chatter on the on the Golf Channel about this new psychological approach he's been taking on, and I was kind of curious to hear what it was.
2014, by the way.
2014?
Was Tour Championship, yep.
He's won it twice, I believe. Double check that. I think it's more recent than that.
Four-time major, winning the 2011 U.S. Open, 2012 PGA Championship, 2014 Open Championship, and the 2014 PGA Championship. Those are his majors.
So look at the Players Championship. He's won it once or twice.
Twice.
I want to say it's like 2018, 2017. Because we were at the Tour Championship when he won with a bunch of my juniors.
He won it in 2019 and also... Hold on.
So the 2019 one is the one I'm referring to.
Okay, yeah.
It should be the same year he won the Players. But...
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, there's an interview after he won that. And it was at night. You could see the 17th green behind him. And they're asking about his new approach and all that. And... he said, you know, at the end of the day, like he said, it's really not a psychological thing. He said, I just realized that at the end of the day, whether I shoot 65 or 75, the people that love me are still going to love me no matter what. And I turned to a couple of my juniors the next week in one of the classes I was teaching for them.
He's only won one players, by the way. Sorry.
He's only won the players once.
Only won the players once, yeah.
He's Which won, was what year?
2019. Okay. So he's won four majors, one players, three WGCs, and five FedEx Cup playoff
Dude's
points.
Dude's won a lot of tournaments. So
he's sixth overall in money earners on the tour all time.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
So, but what he said, that line, I turned a couple of my juniors the next day as teaching this class. I said, y'all watch out. Rory's about to go on a tear because it wasn't psychological. It was in his soul. Like that's a heart. That's not a head change. That's a deep down in your being change of like, I'm secure in who I am. It doesn't matter. Like, the people that love me aren't going to remember. They're not going to be at my funeral going, oh, look at how many tournaments I won. They're going to go, he impacted my life. He was my brother. He was my, you know, he was my dad. He was, you know, whatever. Like, that's what they're going to remember him for. It's not all his tournaments.
There's a huge change in some of these really, really good players who are on the tour. And it seems like their first couple wins, you know, they're out just trying to soak in the limelight, going to the clubs and, like, you know, soaking it all in. But then I was recently listening to a podcast that Rory was on, and he was like, it was actually the TaylorMade podcast, and the tour guy, Chris Chott, asked him, he's like, you know, how does Rory McIlroy celebrate wins? And he goes, you know, in my younger years, I used to go out to the clubs and, you know, do that whole deal. And he goes, now it's just celebrating with my, you know, close family and friends and just the people who have been with me the whole way. And it's like, I feel like at a certain point in your life, especially when you're on tour like that, it's like you realize how many people or the like, for example, like the real ones, like the people in your inner circle, the people who mean the most, and honestly the people who are probably enabling him to then win those events. Instead of just
and who've been with him in
everybody.
The dark times,
yeah,
or you know, through the struggles,
through the dry spell, and I bet if you talk to Jordan Spieth, he's probably the same way,
right? None of the people like they care about the fans, and the fans provide a little inspiration and some encouragement, but they can't provide what those people that really, really know you can provide.
I agree,
and it's okay. Like it's all one big part of it, but. Back to my answer about Lee Westwood, like Lee Westwood's had his wife caddying for him, and then he had his son caddying for him in another tournament. Like, I think he's just enjoying time with his family, and just I'm just playing golf, and I get to spend it with people that I love and care about, and who are helping me, and that's just awesome and wonderful. And like, you can't. So that's kind of tied to the Rory thing. That's why I brought up Rory. Is I think they both have gotten into that mindset. People keep talking about Rory's in a slump. It's like, guys, you forget that. What are you talking about, a slump? He won the Players' Championship and the Tour Championship in that same year in 2019. That was, guys, it was not even 2 years ago. That was a year and a half. He's in a slump. What are you talking about? Because he had one bad round at the Arnold Palmer.
I think people like discount like, how hard it is to win on the PGA Tour. And it's like, when you're Rory and you're sixth all-time in career earnings, like, you've got the bones in your body to be able to win a tournament. Like, Matthew Wolff was talking about how hard it is to win on the PGA Tour and how lucky, like, him and, like, Morikawa and Zalatoris is about to be next. Like, you know, how hard it is to win on the PGA Tour.
Well, and we've seen that with the BPN, OPN proximity as we've been tracking and, you know, looking at different things is, like, dude, the difference between first and, like, seventh sometimes is, like, fractions of shots. You know, it's like, okay, who's going to win this week? Well, .1, .1. I mean, they're all within, that's seven guys within four-tenths of a stroke of each other. Like, okay, who's going to edge it out? I don't know. Like, any of those guys can shoot crazy low at any point in time. They get hot with a putter. They get, you know, like laser sharp with their irons all of a sudden, like they don't know what's happening. Like it just happens. It just gets crazy, stupid hot. And any of those guys can do that. I don't care who it is. And so, you know, that's the ability to just be kind of in a relaxed mindset and realizing, you know what, you don't actually control whether you win it or not. You control your mind and how focused you are in the next shot. That's really it. I mean, you can boil all of sports psychology down into, are you secure in who you are? And the people that matter, matter. And can you stay completely focused on the thing that's in front of you? Don't let your nerves distract you. Don't let the crowd distract you. Don't let your buddy's comments or your friend's comments distract you. Or the side comment from somebody that doesn't know anything about you, you happen to be playing with. It's like, hey, man, I noticed this about your swing. It's like, dude, you know nothing about my swing. You know, like, even if those offhanded comments can throw you off if you aren't fully committed in what it is that you're doing. So, you know, that's the crux of that. I just think that's one of the secrets to them playing well. I'm getting better at trying to bring this back full circle. So that's high-level players.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about the beginners? The really big challenge, I actually have a group of Indian guys that are all taking lessons together. They're all buddies. They've never played golf before, other than maybe going to the driving range once, maybe twice. None of them have clubs. They used our entire rental set of clubs, six of them.
Six of them in one set?
Yeah. And they all want to learn the game. They're like, hey, we're 40. We would love to see if this is something we're interested in. And so they've bought a 12-lesson package for the six of them together.
Oh, I remember you telling me about this.
Yeah.
That's so funny that they're using one set of clubs. I mean, like, that's great. That's so great.
And so, like, we're just using the rental sets.
Which, by the way, if you're coming out here and you're trying to...
exhausted all of our rental sets.
If you're trying to come out here and learn golf and you want to come out to Franklin Bridge and use a rental set, we've got the best rental sets in the state.
Like, we have Titleist.
We have Titleist clubs. You'll have a Scotty Cameron putter. Like... if you want to come out, if
you
want to come out and
equipment.
Learn the sport, like, you're going to be set up fine, even if you don't have any equipment to your name.
Right. And so the challenge of teaching them is this game, in terms of its complexities, is so high. Like, basketball and tennis have some complexities, but they're very basic. Like, there's not a lot. Like, the court doesn't change shapes, and the hoop isn't at different heights, and the net doesn't change heights, and, you know, you can play on different court types, but in you can play in different arenas for basketball.
The only sport that I feel like would be somewhat comparable to golf is tennis, when you're playing on either, like, grass, clay, asphalt, like, the different types of, like,
turf.
But other than that, I feel like Scott.
Every other sport.
Golf has got, like, the most intricate ways of even playing the same course, infinitely many different types of
right.
ways.
Right, and to me, that's one of the reasons why I love the game so much, is there's so many different ways to see it. There's so many different ways to play it. There's so many different looks you get. I mean, imagine if every time you played basketball, like, the hoop was at a different height. And the court was, like, oval one time, and the three-point was, like, the stair steps instead of an arc. Like,
so today...
And the court was, like, tilted sideways, and the hoop was tilted and twisted sideways. And
I mean, it's crazy. Like, today on 8, the flag is put, like, on the most... like, the very front edge of the green. When I'm saying front edge, I mean, like...
three or four bases.
Less than like
10
two,
feet.
Less than two. I was going to say less than like 2 or 3 feet off the front of the green. But I'm like, I've never seen that there. And so, like, and I always think of when I always see a red flag here at Franklin Bridge, which means front, I'm always like, danger. Because, like, you don't have much to work with if you want to stay before. Like, you got to hit it past the flag or, like, stick it somewhat close. And so I was like, I come up to putt and I've still got like 15 feet left. And I'm like,
I've never seen this putt.
What? I've never seen this putt before, ever. And it was just like, it was to the point where, like,
there's
a round
no
like
other
that,
game like it.
It'll make or break you.
Yeah.
And especially, like, you've never seen that putt before. I've never even looked at that reed in my entire life, because I'm never usually hitting it past the flag on
and you know what's crazy? If they move the pin, you may never have that look ever again.
Ever again.
And so I think that's one of the allures of the game. It's one of the reasons why I love it, is it's just – there's just so much to articulate to beginners that it can be very challenging to package that information in a way that is palatable, because you can't let them drink from a fire hose. Like, you've got to build it in pieces. A lot of times building a program like that for brand new beginners, especially as adults, is you kind of build building blocks. You build parts of the swing and then you build the whole. And so it's one of the ways I like to do it. But one of the joys of teaching beginners, dude, they are sponges, man. They take what you say as like a scripture. Like, this is the greatest thing ever. You're awesome. This is so great. And the other thing that I like about beginners, it's kind of like you just came to the game a year ago, really, is like you ask some questions that you don't normally get asked, and it really forces and challenges you to how good am I at actually understanding and articulating what I know about the game? Because you're about to ask me a question that may seem very basic to you and is very basic to most people to answer, but realize the complexities of the game and how do I articulate it to you in a way that's easy to understand a very, very complex movement. And so, to me, the art of being an expert in anything is to be able to distill the essential elements of it to take something that's incredibly complex and make it very simple.
I'll never...
without losing the depth of it.
I'll never understand, like, I'll... because I came from baseball, right? So it's like, I've...
Right. Oh, don't mix your baseball and your golf swing.
I know how to talk about, you know, a complex movement like a swing, right? And so I think that if I was just like, you know, if I was a track star in college, or if I was like if I played basketball or football or any sport other than like, you know, golf, baseball, and tennis, right? Like,
right.
Like I understand how hard this game can be, and like the reason why mm-hmm. I've been able to get really good really fast is only because I have the knowledge and the patience to be able to understand some of these movements that a golf swing is. But I'll never be able to understand somebody who comes to the game with like zero building blocks. Like, I just think that would be close to impossible.
So I'm going to do a shout out to Ken Lee, who's plays here a lot. Very good player, former PGA golf professional, been in the business a long time, very high knowledge of the game and of the swing. And we were working today on his game and on his swing, and I taught him something he's never understood before. And he's like, okay, now this all starts to make sense. I said, but the industry didn't understand it. Thanks to modern technology, like, I was able to, something he's been afraid to do in his golf swing, I was able to kind of, you know, soften that fear and get him to understand why he's afraid to do it and why it keeps him from getting better. And so making that change in that movement by understanding a very complex subject in a complex but palatable way was like, oh, okay, now I understand this. Now I think I can do that. Like, that's very doable for me. So, you know, that's that was really fun. So, like, and the only way that I can articulate a complex subject like that to a high-level player without ruining them is if I learn from teaching my beginners how to do the same thing for them. I mean, I had a moment this week in a ladies' clinic that's arguably one of the best moments I've ever had in a clinic setting. I had some sessions like this in my Cracking the Code class this winter, but man, I had a session with these ladies that they were just so willing to, like, I stepped in and kind of poked on them pretty hard when it came to the language that you're using, the things that you're saying about the game are actually keeping you from getting better, and here's why. Gosh, it was so productive. But I sat there, and I sent them a text afterward, and I said, I really learned a lot as a teacher in that lesson. And it was so cool. I was like, I got to keep that mindset, like me willing to learn as a teacher and coach. And I said, I'm going to start applying what I did there in more of my future clinics. And I learned a lot from my Cracking the Code group this winter, too, about how to do this better. And I already do it really well. And it's just so neat. There's certain things you can't get from great players. I can't get that skill set from teaching high-level players. You have to get that from the other end. So there's good and bad of both. And I think one of the barriers for the high-level players is like, well,
I don't want to do it that way. I've never done it that way. I don't like to think about it that way. But it's like, you need to. They're unwilling to move from where they are. So
I also don't think that we would be, you know, I don't know what this, I think this is like episode 146 or something like that. Like,
yeah.
I don't think we would be 146 episodes deep into a podcast if we weren't trying to explain what seems to be a simple yet complex movement. But like obviously there's 146 episodes worth of knowledge about how to play better
right.
golf. And it's like, it's not as simple as just put the puck in the goal or put the ball in the goal or put the ball in the hoop or, you know,
like, that was a really weird analogies right there.
Well, I mean,
put
like,
the puck in the hoop, put the
ball
in
the puck in the goal.
That's
so great. Put the puck in the, wait, unless I said that wrong.
You said the puck in the hole.
Puck in the goal.
Did he say puck in the hole?
Puck in
the first one you said was puck in the hole.
Puck like, in the goal.
Wait a second.
Maybe
where
the
are
G
we?
Was just very soft. But
the
anyway,
puck in the
hole. It's not as this game is not as simple as just put the ball in the hole, right? Like
yeah.
I just feel like we wouldn't be 140 something episodes deep if it wasn't if this game was
we'd be bored
easy
of ping,
to,
we wouldn't
easy
be able to get
explain.
This far with ping pong.
Easy to explain.
Not get this far with ping pong.
I don't know if we. Do you think we could have a ping pong podcast that would be 145 episodes?
We
six
could,
episodes.
They'd be all 1 minute long.
Yeah.
Sorry if you love ping pong. I love ping pong. There's probably a lot more
pong.
Complexities to it than I'm giving it credit for.
Sure.
But so that was a long little. That's kind of fun. It's just kind of a little jaunt exercise through.
Yeah, I mean this episode
question.
Of Ashok is going to be one of the quicker ones, but.
Because there's a massive party going on.
There's a massive party going on inside. And number two, it's only May 12th. Like, we're on
we're only
on,
4 weeks into the
week,
golf season.
We're on week four of the golf season. And with this Tennessee weather, man, like, we've been even robbed of one of those 4 weeks just with rain and this random cold front that came through. And I mean,
and it's a little chilly today, too. Like, it keeps people from staying, getting outside.
Like, our grounds crew hasn't even really been able to cut fairways because of
the
different weather that's been going on here.
The grass has been in and out in dormancy, like, so many times in the last 3 or 4 weeks. So, I think we've got a question out there.
Chris? Come on up to the mic, Chris.
Hit me with
yeah.
your best shot. Dun. Why don't you
careful, we might get copyrighted. No, I'm kidding.
Yes, right.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, man.
Good?
Yeah,
I
perfect.
Think we're good.
Yeah, yeah.
So, happy to say, within the past 20 minutes, you've gained a rating, a follower, and a new listener.
Yes.
Keith Cloutier, my dad, is now listening to the podcast, really enjoying it.
Nice.
Love that.
Thanks, man.
Wait, what's his name?
Keith Cloutier.
Keith,
welcome to the podcast.
Keith, this 5 seconds.
First time listener.
This 5 seconds is dedicated to you, Keith.
Maybe he'll become a long time listener and then eventually be a first time caller.
There you go.
It's possible.
What's up, man? What do you got?
Well, instead of flying down here to Tennessee to ask you the question, I'm going to ask it for him.
Okay.
Oh, love this.
So, and he doesn't get to go to the range that much. Typically is playing when he can, so he's wondering, is there anything he can do to get a little bit more practice per se out of these rounds? And he's about a 10 handicapper, so he's
okay, so he plays some pretty good golf.
Yeah, he's very into golf, similar to me.
Out of rounds or out of range sessions?
Out of rounds. He's not able to get to the range as much as he would like, or
gotcha.
As much as he knows he probably should. So he's looking, is there anything I can do, you know, maybe in some of those evening nine-hole rounds to get some good practice out of there.
Absolutely.
Or something like that.
So, one of my favorite ones, this will be a real challenge as a 10 handicap, but you can do it, is to play a two-ball worst ball scramble. You've heard me talk about this one. Like, I absolutely love the two-ball worst ball scramble. It's
it's brutal.
Dude, it is brutal. Like, you feel like you've gone through hell and back. Like, this is your worst nightmare. You know, we've all had, like, those nightmare dreams. I used to have them as a kid, like, playing golf. You have these nightmares. It's like, it's your worst nightmare on, like,
steroids.
It doesn't even feel
like
that
that's
bad.
That's not even.
It doesn't feel that bad until you get to the green and you realize that you both have to make the putt.
Yeah, you have to make both putts. You have to make. You have to hit. If you hit a chip to a foot and a half, you have to hit another good one. And maybe it was a hard pitch. Like, maybe it was a hard up and down anyway. And you're like, oh, yeah, I got it to a foot and a half. Normally, you get to relax and chill and walk up and feel the joy of that. But that's robbed of you because you got to hit it again.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And then you hit it to 25 feet and you're going, oh, crap. Now I've got to hit two 25-foot putts. You drain the first one, you hit the next one to 5 feet. Like, crap, now I got to make 2 5-footers. Like, goodness. And then you make the first one barely on the edge, and then you're scared out of your mind to hit the next one. It's like, there you go. There's a double. Enjoy the double. Hit one out of bounds. You stripe your first drive, hit the next one out of bounds, and you got to re-tee two more times. It's like people are like, oh, the second man's always the better man. I was like, not in this game. So, like, it really beats you up. But one of the things I like players to take away from that is really, I'm going to give you twofold. One is the mental fortitude to handle failure. It's massive. The second one is, and the reason why it's the second and not the first is because you need the first to be able to do the second. And that is to be able to evaluate your game and where it's weak. It will expose every single weakness in your game, which will help focus you for the next part that I'm going to give you a way to practice. I don't mind dropping a couple of balls down and hitting a few extra shots, understanding that you're using it as practice time. But one of my favorite ones is to hit multiple shots around the green, like play the hole normally, finish it out, and then drop 4 or 5 balls and try and get them all up and down. Move on to the next hole. A little evening 9-hole round is a great way to do it.
Unless there's somebody hot on you from the back. We're always a big pace of play people here. Yeah.
That makes it a lot tougher, I
know. Yeah. Playing with somebody. Ooh, man.
That would be like strategy coming ball, I guess.
Yeah, strategy can always be worked on.
I always like to practice like mental fortitude. And, like, even if I'm just having a casual round with one of my buddies, or if I'm just out here and I'm playing with somebody I know, or even somebody that I don't know, I'm like, I like to put myself in situations where if I'm playing with a foursome, like this happened today, I was playing with 3 other guys, and, you know, they weren't the best, but
yep.
I was like, you know, I got to beat the best guy every single hole. You know, it's like I was practicing that mental fortitude so that when I do end up getting in a situation where it's a little bit harder, like I will, you know, then have experience in the competition, even though there is no competition when it's actually happening.
Right. Well, okay, so that was good dead time for me to be able to answer. I honestly have no idea what you just said because my mind was somewhere else. So
I was just talking about practicing mental fortitude.
I completely apologize. Okay, good. but like, I didn't feel like I answered that question as deeply as I felt like I'd need to.
It's tough.
Yeah, because it is a tough one. But I've done this before, so I'm trying to think about like what I've done for other players who do have more time. And so I'm going to use Chris as the example. So I've asked him to hit a low draw in terms of a feel for him. Doesn't mean he's going to hit a low draw in terms of – it's just the feel that he has. So, for instance, let's say I'm asking you to hit a low draw. The way you could go in a normal course of play is aim everything down the right side. Aim it down the right side of the fairway. Hit a low draw. Aim it into the left half of the green. Hit a low draw. Even on a right pin. Pin's tucked in on the right side. Hit a low draw. That means you got to start it off the green and draw it in. And so what that would do is that would force you into a situation where you change or you don't. If you don't change it, it's big penalty. If you do, big success. So you're forced into the situations. I actually listened to something yesterday working out in the gym. It's an Arnold Schwarzenegger motivational speech. He's talking to a university, and he said he doesn't like plan B. People have all these plan Bs for their life. It is a proven fact that when people have a safety net, a plan B, they underperform every time. Well, okay, if I just kind of aim over here to the middle, I'm still trying to hit this low draw. If it comes out a little right, I'm okay. That's a plan B type strategy. Aim it down the right side and play it that way the entire time. I had a had a really high level player one time that I told him he was incredibly good, like tour level good. I said, he takes all these really conservative lines when he plays because he thinks that's the best way to play. And I said, look, I want you to fire at every single flag. I want you to take the most aggressive line on every tee shot, on every approach shot, on every, like, if you've got a bunker shot that's crazy short-sighted and you normally just want to try and leave yourself 15 feet on the other side of the hole, I want you to try and, like, maybe even land it in the rough so it one hops on and sneaks in, like, as close to the cup as possible. Like, take the most aggressive spot everywhere. Cut the corner on a par five. Try and drive a short par four. Like, as aggressive as you can get it, do it. And he never, this is the frustrating part, he never did it. I was like, dude, if you would do that, he's like, well, it's not the best way to play. I was like, yeah, but you're going to learn something that you wouldn't learn otherwise. Yeah. And so he played too conservative, and so he never learned really when to play fully aggressive. And so get on the other side of the road, play too aggressive, then you learn how to play them both. And so when you are forced into a situation where you have to do something, it's great. Maybe you're working on hitting the ball higher. Well, try and hit every shot high. And even better, on a windy day, try and hit every shot high. Take enough club where it's going to get to the green, but play every shot high. Whatever that thing is in your golf swing, that's, especially if it's attached to a specific shot, I think that's one of the best ways to go about if you don't have time. And maybe you don't even have the time to work on it at home. You're busy, you got family, kids, work, just the – yeah, so like he can work on it at home if he has the time. But if you don't, or you choose not to, you can do that on the golf course. Put yourself in a situation. I'm working on hitting a low draw. I'm gonna set up and hit a low draw every time. If I don't, I'm gonna make a triple. Tough luck. So, pony up or get out.
There you go.
So,
do you think that's good for this episode?
That's fine.
Love
it. I gotta pee. Did I just say that on air?
You did, yeah. But
son, what would you like to say? I got to pay.
I think we had, the amount of questions was low, but I think the amount of information was high. So
I think that was really good. Too. I think you had asked, they were deeper questions.
Totally, totally.
Than we sometimes get. So
yeah, agreed.
It's fun. Come out here and ask your questions.
I mean,
y'all,
it's
free information. It's not walking on YouTube. Like, get your questions answered. I don't just offer up free information all week.
Yeah, and they're like, tailored to you. Like, everything is tailored to you. So, like, if you come out here and ask your question, Scott's going to tailor the answer to you as much as he knows you.
And the food's fantastic. I know people like to go out and eat. I know not everybody has the same view on COVID, but whether you are, you know, COVID conscious and want to stay home, or whether you're like, I don't care about COVID, like, I'm going to move on with my life. Everybody would agree that getting out and being with people and being out in, you know, God's green earth, like, on this awesome golf course in this environment is good for all of us. So get on out here.
Yeah, come on out and play a late afternoon round. Get around at around, you know, four. Even just get in, sneak in 9 holes before 7. You know, just come on out here to the back porch of the Persimmon Pub at 7 p.m. We're getting into our mid-May to late May, and then, you know, we're going to really be hitting the ground running hard in June and July and even into August. So yep. It's going to be a great season. We're in week 4 of the season
week 4.
And, y'all, thanks for listening, watching, viewing, subscribing, wherever you guys are at. Make sure to give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys are listening to this episode, Apple, Spotify, wherever. And we'll see you on the next one. It's been Scott and Jack from the back porch of the Persimmon Pub. Peace. Thanks, y'all, for listening to this episode of the Champions Playbook. As always, you can find us anywhere that you guys are. So make sure to check out Scott on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of the above. His Instagram is at shasseygolf. That's 2 S's and 2 E's. So make sure to go and check out everything that he's got going on over on his Instagram page. As well as make sure you follow Franklin Bridge. Franklin Bridge puts out some great things as well, and we want to make sure that we support them because they support us. So as always, feel free to come by the back porch of the Persimmon Pub at 7 p.m. on Wednesdays to come and listen to us talk golf. So book a late afternoon round of golf, and then afterwards, come on inside, get some food, some drinks. We got some specials going on. We had some $5 flatbread pizzas. We had some amazing chicken tacos, as well as drink specials going on all night long. So make sure to support the Persimmon Pub as well when you come out. We would love to see you guys. We do one episode and then a live Q&A and then another episode. So from 7 to 9,
9 on Wednesdays. We hope to see you soon, and we'll see you on the next one. Peace.